Well, good morning, everyone. First off, I want to thank all of you who braved the crowds out there with the Giants. Boy, that's pretty crazy. My name is Bethany Young Holt, and I am an epidemiologist by training. Actually, I was trained across the bay at Berkeley. I'm now the director of the Coalition Advancing Multipurpose Innovations, and I'll be telling you a little bit more about that in a bit. But I really want to thank Wayne and the session organizers for inviting me here today, giving me an opportunity to share with you not only some updates from the London Family Planning Summit, but some really exciting work underway in an emerging field called multipurpose prevention technologies. So as many of you probably know, this past July, the UK government, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, along with the UNFPA and some other donors, hosted the groundbreaking summit aimed at mobilizing global policy, financing, commodity, and service delivery to improve the support and rights for women and girls in some of the world's poorest countries and enable them to have improved access to contraception without coercion or discrimination. And this was a really big deal, as many of you know, for the Gates Foundation and Melinda Gates to come out and do this and challenge some of the religious institutions that are out there. The summit called for an unprecedented global political commitment and resources that will enable 120 million more women and girls to use contraceptives by the year 2020. Now, reaching this goal could result in over 200,000 fewer women and girls dying in pregnancy and childbirth and nearly 3 million fewer infants dying over the first year of life, as well as providing family planning for an additional 120 million women in the world's poorest countries. The global community is committed to sustaining coverage for an estimated 260 million women. So in total, what this summit ended up doing is committing resources for contraception for 380 million women and girls. So during the summit, the participants committed about $406 billion to family planning. And this not only came from the donor countries, which can promise $2.6 billion, but also $2 billion from developing countries, which really shows their commitment to this. And this came from not only donor countries, but also a large number of foundations. So what does this mean? This means that over the next decade or so, there's a commitment to increase the demand and support for family planning, contraceptive development, but also, which we think, Wayne and I think is extremely exciting, as well as partners at the Guttmacher Institute, the advancement of the development of multipurpose prevention technologies for reproductive health. So I want to spend a second now and see a show of hands. Who has ever heard of multipurpose prevention technologies, or MPTs? Wow, I'm really impressed. That's actually great. And the reason this is great is that this concept of MPTs is really only 3 years old in terms of the name and what we call it. The idea is that there would be single products or a suite of products that could simultaneously protect women and girls from multiple adverse outcomes, specifically unintended pregnancy and specific STIs like HIV, HPV, other viral STIs in particular. So these MPTs are among the most promising and innovative health products under development. And we have now the endorsement from major donors now supporting this work, the USAID, NIH, and also the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now, the reason this is so important is that the consequences of unintended pregnancy, HIV and other STIs, do not happen to women in silos. They don't decide, okay, today I'm going to go to the clinic and protect myself from HIV, and tomorrow I'll go over there and protect myself from pregnancy. We all know that, you know, for the married woman in the Ivory Coast who has 4 to 6 children, she might actually not want to have any more kids, but she might be faithful, but not trust her partner or husband, and she needs something that she can use easily and effectively. And we also know that to get to a clinic for such a woman is a major event. So to help her and to just reduce all of the global needs associated with unintended pregnancy and HIV and STIs, we need new products that are easy to use, not only for the woman in the Ivory Coast, but also the 23-year-old woman at Sac State who, you know, maybe is very consistently using condoms for the first month or so that she's with a partner, and then she goes on the pill, and then, whoops, she's not protected from STIs. So what we're talking about are new products that can help women around the world at different stages of their life and in different regions of the world, depending on who they are and where they are and what they need. So I like this figure, and it's actually borrowed from a colleague of ours at USAID, Judy Manning. And this illustrates the priority regions for family planning and HIV prevention options for women and girls. You can see that Sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia are the two regions hit hardest by fertility, HIV, and HPV. And this year, you know, we can just see from these statistics that there is a humongous burden for all of these different STIs and unintended pregnancies. Oops, sorry. Now, the idea of an NPT really has is not really a earth-shattering in terms of public health concept. It has a precedent in terms of contraceptive pills combined with iron, water combined with fluoride, and the idea is that if an effective contraceptive is combined with an effective method for preventing an STI, or including HIV or other STIs, the method's going to be more widely used and therefore have a more public health impact. Some of the available MPTs you'll probably recognize. They're condoms, female and male condoms. They work terrifically, excellent forms of prevention if they are used consistently and correctly, but they're not. And so that's why we need more methods. And the bottom of the slide illustrates some of the new technologies that are in development. These include drug combinations, drug device combinations. So you're probably all aware of the Nuva ring, intravaginal rings. There's some products in development now. Developers are working on combining a ring that would have a contraceptive and an HIV prevention drug, say tenofovir if it works, as well as multi-purpose vaccines and bacterial therapeutics. So there are lots of things in development that are very exciting. This just shows some of the devices. Some of the devices also being looked at are taking the diaphragm and impregnating it with a drug. The working group that is focused on MPTs has identified the following, that the indications that should be addressed for MPTs should primarily be, the first priority will be HIV and pregnancy, followed by HIV and other STIs. And in some regions of the world, such as China and Southeast Asia, STIs and pregnancies are highest priority. But the roadmap for MPTs is not a linear one. It's similar to all drug development. It's never an easy process. Drug development takes a long time. So now I want to step back for a second and give you a little, describe to you the exciting work that is going on with partners to really move this field forward. There is, about 3 years ago, there was a meeting held in Berkeley to bring together advocates and researchers, health professionals that were interested in working together and bridging the silos between HIV and STIs. Out of this meeting was the consensus that there really should be an initiative focused on multipurpose prevention technologies. And this initiative was largely funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. Whoops, sorry. I don't know how that happened. Sorry. The mission of the initiative is to advance the development and introduction of technologies that simultaneously address multiple reproductive and sexual health needs. Now, this initiative is really taking off right now. There are increased funding from NIH, the Gates Foundation now, and USAID to drug developers to explore opportunities for combining different contraceptives and HIV prevention methods that can enable women to protect themselves simultaneously from these outcomes. And we're also really excited that as this field is growing, we have engaged a real global momentum for these technologies. We have, and for the initiative, we have partners now in China, in India, and South Africa, as well as throughout the U.S. The Guttmacher Institute, ARHP, and others are all working to advance this work. So I wanted to just inform you all of what is going on and encourage any of you who are interested to get involved as well and stay tuned. So thank you.
So any quick questions for Bethany before we go to the panel? If not, please have a seat, and I'll encourage anyone who has questions to say your name first and then make your question. We have a nice period of time now where we can talk. There were a few questions the last time. Yes, Amy, please. Nomenclature?
Yeah.
You compared unplanned and unintended pregnancies and said they were in different amounts. Can you tell us what your definition of those two?
It's going to be hard to just speak up loud.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, it's all taped together.
No, that's fine. Okay, so yeah, I actually took this from the Guttmacher Institute. And to rephrase again what the slide said, it said 82% of teen pregnancies are unplanned, and then teens account for 1/5 of unintended pregnancies annually. So the way I looked at it, and let me know if I misinterpreted this, is the 1/5 of the unintended pregnancies annually. So if we look at the entire population that is able to give birth, 1/5 of them are by teenagers who did not intend to have a baby. Correct? Yeah. Okay.
Please, right up front.
Oh, go ahead.
Larry, please.
The two terms would be essentially the same. Those are synonymous, unplanned and unintended.
Right.
In our usage.
The way I think it's on the slide is confusing.
Okay.
I said unwanted.
Sorry. Good suggestion for revision. We have a question in the front.
Another question for Tara. Are you planning to
please say your name and speak up.
I mean, I would love that. And if anyone here is doing that work, please let me know. The survey we have right now, we are integrating a few other survey questions, but with fund being so limited, there's only so many questions we can ask and not burden the patients. But I do hope that this research kind of spurs a little bit more movement behind looking at this population. And so, yeah, if anyone wants to chime in. Please feel free.
Anyone chiming in on that thought? Anyone with rich relatives who want to invest in research?
Yeah.
Okay. Next question. There were several hands in the air. Please identify yourself.
Yeah. So referring back to the primary substance upon admission, so we asked the teens what did they use? What was the drug of choice that they used? The first one that they most used. I think the question was phrased something to like, what drug do you use the most? And we rated that one as the primary, and marijuana came out on top. So there might have been a combination of them using marijuana or heroin or alcohol and marijuana, but it just depended on how they ranked it, and that's why we got the 40%, how they had the highest. And then if we looked at the slide on marijuana, so there was a large proportion of them who all said they used it. So to me, the way it would be interesting to look at this a little bit further, it said that 72% of pregnant teens use marijuana, so a great deal of them were using it. So it might have been that someone used alcohol more heavily, and then their secondary substance was marijuana.
Follow-up question over here, please. I think it's to you as well.
Yeah.
And then there was a question over this way. We'll get to you.
Okay, great. This is actually really the survey you're talking about for treatment and kind of the services they're receiving. It's also one of our treatment locator surveys. It's called the NSATS, N-SSATS. I think it stands for the National Survey for Substance Abuse Treatment Services, I believe. That would be a good lead if you guys are looking for data on that. And to speak to your question about, that's right. So there was the referral system that I didn't get a chance to put into this. And looking at the referral system is really interesting. Like I said, who's referring these teens or women in general to these substance abuse treatment centers? I think that would paint a really interesting picture. Also, secondary substance use would be interesting, too, I think, because as we talked about the question about marijuana, why does it only say 45%, but there's 70% use in teens would be really interesting. That's what I'm getting off the top of my head. But if you want to email me for more information, I'd be happy to help you.
Great. Question over here, please.
Hi.
Glad you made it from that coast to this coast.
I have to go back, unfortunately. And this is a question for Dr. Kleinman.
We'll probably need you at the microphone.
I was interested, most of the data you presented were in the aggregate, and so I was kind of interested in some of those things, specifically like age of menarche. There's been discussion lately about racial, ethnic, subjective, economic disparities. In menarche specifically, but I was just wondering if there are any other interesting findings like that that may have disaggregated by those categories based on the
You know, we actually didn't do too much of that in this particular analysis, primarily because we were trying to look at the overall population levels. But we certainly could do, we haven't actually run the menarche numbers by race and ethnicity, so that's a pretty interesting idea. I mean, really, any of those event history analyses could be run by race and ethnicity or by many other demographic characteristics. So, you know, the one that we focused most on was age at first sex, and you do see some differentials there, but we haven't actually done too much of that yet, so maybe that's the next place to go.